Hello, and welcome to the premiere episode of the Neon Gutter podcast. My name is Bert Cohen. On this podcast, we're going to be taking you back in time to the Las Vegas of the 1980s and 90s and introduce you to a cast of characters who combine their comedy talents with their love of being extremely cheap to become some of the internet's earliest Vegas influencers. And on today's show, we're going to be discussing a very magical place called Vegas World and how our heroes became fascinated with this long-gone casino and its owner, the Polish maverick, Bob Stupak. Now, describing them as influencers will almost certainly infuriate my co-hosts, which is precisely the reason I describe them that way. But regardless, with me for our journey are Matt and Dan. Hi, guys.
Good. Hello. How are you? And
I'm great.
I will take the bait. we were never influencers. We were just some comedians who were trying to get somebody other than our parents to laugh at our jokes. So we were just looking for anything to write about and to make people laugh. And also, ultimately, I think we were much better at being cheap than we were at being comedians.
Yeah, we weren't influencers the way you use the word now. We were just people who had an influence on a lot of other people.
Although I would love to sell you a mattress.
And I would like to buy one.
Okay.
But before we get to that, that's beside the point of the whole podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about one of your favorite subjects, guys, and perhaps the site of your biggest exploits, Vegas World. Mm-hmm. But let's start a little bit by setting the scene. Could you describe maybe how you two know each other and what prompted you to start traveling to Las Vegas at all?
We met in college. We were also the epicenter for a lot of this is UC Irvine is where the two of us met as freshmen. We met in the comedy club there on campus, which is a great place to do stand up. Audiences are friendly. Matt was kind of a jerk to me.
I was a jerk to everyone. It was my modus operandi, but
yeah. Yeah, kind of sharp-edged, definitely subtle, and poked fun at me. And my brother Phil was there. He was 2 years ahead of me in going through the undergrad program. And we had this comedy club on campus, and we all met and started hanging out. And I think it was Matt's idea first to go to Vegas. So Mike Ho and Phil and me and Matt, and those were one of the main, the kind of the core group that started. But that's where we met. It was 1986 when we went to college.
The fall 1986. Of 1986. Yeah. But we didn't start going to Vegas till 1987.
I think that's right.
Early 1988. We weren't even 21 yet when we started going to Vegas.
That's right.
Did
you have any issues with that? Did you have any issues with that?
No, and that was one of the big appeals of Vegas at that point is like we were the only people under 60 in Vegas. And like so it was like this wide open playground. I don't think I ever got carded once, and I didn't even look 21. Like I think I had just reached puberty at that point.
I would say too, like it's probably people in their 30s, 40s. We were definitely always the youngest people in town, but now that I'm 55, I think the people in Vegas when we started going were younger than I am now. But we were definitely by at least a couple decades always the youngest people in town.
Oh yeah. It was Vegas was on its heels at that time. Vegas was not like somebody our age only went to Vegas ironically.
Yeah.
And is that why you guys went?
No. I don't know why you went, Matt, but.
Well, the first time I went with a group of my high school friends. We went out on a Saturday morning and came back on Sunday. And I think I carried $60 in my pocket for that whole weekend. Yeah, we just went because it's like, hey, we can go to Vegas. Let's go to Vegas. Why not? You know, you're young. You have a ton of free time and you're looking for adventures. And I think what happened was we didn't have a lot of money. We weren't going to spend a lot of money. So rather than go to Vegas thinking it would entertain us, we went to Vegas thinking we would entertain ourselves using Vegas.
That's right. That's a good way to put it. Also, Vegas was cheap. I mean, there was the cheapo aesthetic that grew out of it. But, you know, at the time in the 80s, it called itself the entertainment capital of the world. Right. But it was a certain kind of entertainment. It was a gambling. And then it was a certain kind of show, like those cheesy variety shows, and then drinking.
Like Boobs and showgirls and hack comics.
Right, exactly. And so it wasn't until like the 90s they started thinking of like, oh, let's put in like family stuff, like water slides and amusement parks. And then it wasn't until after that where they started getting restaurants from around the world. So even the food was kind of crap in Vegas at the time. So it was a cheap way to go. The whole cheapo aesthetic was kind of a dance with Vegas. I don't think we went out there trying to be cheap. It just like, it was a, we were college kids. I had a campus job. It didn't get paid much. You know, it's like, to go out with $50 in your pocket and then come home, you know, with $50 in your pocket was pretty great.
Thanks to
some good sports bets. Yeah, those were the good trips. It was cheap, and so it was fun. Yeah.
And cheap became your aesthetic as you got older too. So do you feel like you just everybody's a little bit cheap generally as a high school or college student just because you don't have a lot of money, but you kind of carried it through. Did you carry it through because you learned from that aesthetic, or was that always just kind of part of your personalities that carried you through the rest of your life almost?
I think in a way, when we first started going to Vegas, we got used to it and it was pleasant. And then when they started to get more expensive, we're like, hey, wait a minute, what happened to the 25-cent craps? So I think we got stuck in the past as 20-year-olds, which is kind of depressing, but like to expect Vegas to stay the same. And then so we were always steering toward all the things that were cheap.
Well, but there's another aspect to it too. For me, yeah, as a comic, I always wanted a good story to tell. And yeah, you're going to find a way better story eating a $1.69 buffet than talking about the toilet paper at the Four Seasons Hotel. You know, it's just better stories. And I've lived that way other places too. Like I've stayed at a motel where when I walked in, the guy at the front desk was hacksawing the antlers off a deer. That's a better story than saying, yeah, I walked in and they're really pleasant and they asked me how my day was.
Right.
So speaking of crazy hotels that have a lot of stories to them because they might not be the best places in the world, we've got Vegas World. So Vegas World's been gone for a long time. A lot of people listening to this probably have never even heard of Vegas World. So describe Vegas World for our audience a little bit about what it was and where it was and what made it unique.
Well, Vegas World was the vision of a single man who desperately wanted to be part of the Las Vegas elite, a man named Bob Stupak. And he was always kept at arm's length from them. But I don't know if he was a micromanager or if he just believed in his own vision, but it fully represented a singular vision of one man of a space-themed casino, but also done on an extremely low budget. And in a way that always felt somewhat sinister, somewhat like that maybe something illegal was going on, which was part of the appeal. It was dark and it didn't smell that good. And it was never exactly clean. And like there were styrofoam balls representing the planets over the check-in, the space pod check-in area. So in a way, it felt like a third grader's solar system project as a casino with 1,000 hotel rooms and a massive casino. Everything just felt like one guy who probably had a lava lamp going, yeah, this looks great.
Yeah, it was exactly that. Like you can imagine going to the craft store and getting those those foam balls that fall apart very easily and getting a huge one and painting it and hanging from the ceiling and going, okay, it doesn't look great. Let's dim the lights. That'll help.
Yeah, nothing was done to a high level.
But there was a continuity. I mean, in a way, it was still a casino, but like the Big Six wheel was massive.
The Big Six wheel was a Skylab. On the outside of the 1,000-room hotel tower was a painting of an astronaut floating in space with a cord connecting him to a giant roulette wheel, also floating in space.
That's right.
Now, all of this is a little hard to picture. I think you're doing a great job describing it, but we'll also put some photos on our website, neongutter.com. You can check out because it really sort of has to be seen to be believed. So how did this place that doesn't smell very good, is not very clean, has very apparently tacky decor, how does it attract guests?
That is a fantastic question. So the first time I ever went to Vegas with my friends before Dan joined us, we actually ended up at a cheesy motel across the street from Vegas World because we didn't make reservations in advance. And this was a place that had blue shag carpeting in the room that actually crunched when you stepped on it.
Was that the Sulinda?
The Sulinda Motor Sulinda Hotel, yes. Yeah. But so Vegas World is right across the street. And the six of us sharing that room never even went in there because it looked so sinister and so creepy. We went down the strip to other places and checked them out, but we didn't even go to the giant casino across the street from us because it just looked so foreign and strange. And like, it just looked like if we went in, we would never come out.
Worth calling out that moment too, that six people sharing a room. That was kind of
that was pretty common.
Yeah.
Well, man, you got to save a buck. Otherwise, how are you going to pay for that $1.69 buffet?
Exactly. $10 for accommodations all weekend. It's pretty great.
So it wasn't, its appeal was that it was not appealing.
Yeah.
And when I think I finally, Dan and I finally went in on like the next trip, because I, you know, I said, this place is so weird. And we braved it. We were brave enough to go in there. And it's just like, it's dark. And it's weird. And none of the games are like the games in other casinos. Like it had different blackjack and different craps and had that 30-foot tall space lab big six wheel. And everything was just slightly off. And that was just fascinating. It's like, you know, why? Why is it so different? And I mean, I guess he's trying to distinguish himself too, but also he wanted to prove that he was someone, you know?
And you're talking about Bob Stupak, the owner of the casino. Owner,
yeah, who had his name on the hotel. Bob Stupak's Vegas World.
He had his name in the carpet, too. Like, yes. You could see his name woven into the... But the light bulb that just went on in my head was, it's so tied into our cheapo aesthetic, because he was doing the same thing. Like, the property is not on the strip. It's off, you know, it's farther up the strip, out of town. So he must have paid less for it. It's not downtown. He was doing everything on the cheap also. So I think there was a way in which, in a way, he's kind of our dark godfather. You would go into the parking structure, which was really scary. I mean, it was dingy. It was because you're not on the strip. There's not a lot of lights. It was poorly lit. And you go into the casino from the back on the ground floor, this narrow hallway. And then one of the first things you saw was a display of $1 million. He had $1 million set up in this little cash pyramid under a plexiglass display case.
That sounds very impressive.
Somehow not.
It was not. There were lots of fingerprint smudges. There were smudges all over the case.
That's
and
true.
Then it said Bob Stupak's $1 million display. But I think the big tip off that it wasn't very impressive was that, like, it seemed like at least there were some dollar bills and stuff in there, but most of it was just his own casino's playing chips that made $1 million.
Part of it. So, conceiving $1 million is one thing, but like seeing it in front of you, it's like, oh, that's actually not that impressive. There was actually like, it took some of the romance out of it. And also, well, just the way it was
Vegas
displayed.
World. So I always suspected there probably wasn't even $1 million.
I'm sure
it's just a
wasn't.
Bunch and it's like, oh, this is $1 million. That's like just one, the way they operated. Yeah.
They built like a little plywood stand and then taped dollar bills all around it to look like it.
Did people take pictures with it and that kind of thing? Or did people kind of ignore it?
It was like a hall. Like you'd come up the entry hall, which was all video poker and slot
and
machines
mirrors.
And stuff. And mirrors, of course. Everything was mirrors. Oh. And that was just kind of sitting there in the hallway. It didn't look impressive. It just looked like this is part of the basement.
Well, and it had the placard on it looked like the same kind I would order from a trophy shop here in town. You know, it's just like or that you would make a receptionist label for a front desk. It was not impressive. It was all done on the cheap.
Everything was done on the cheap.
Well, eventually you guys go from getting the courage to go in the place to getting the courage to actually stay in the place. So how does that happen and how did that go?
That wasn't courage, though. That was cheapness again.
Yep.
Because we got in the habit of going to Vegas because, you know, it was our playground. We could do whatever we wanted there. But we were always looking for a cheaper way to do it. And there were ads in Parade magazine, which came free in the Sunday paper. Bob Stupak had full page ads in there for his vacation package, which offered $1,000 in gambling for $396. You pay $396 up front. When you get there, you get $1,000 in gambling money, not real money.
Was it $1,000 to start, or was it less than that to start?
Well, it was $1,000, but it was $400 in table play, 200 in your choice of table player slots, and then 400 in special slots. He had special slots set up just for those $400 in tokens.
Yeah, so any listeners who know anything about Vegas know what special slots
mean. I mean, so, very poorly paying slots.
Yeah.
Well, so we figured out, like, okay. And so you got a room for two nights. You got show tickets, and he had really low rent shows, but he had shows.
Alan and Rossi.
Alan and Rossi. And he also had E.P. King, Memories of Elvis.
That's right.
He had two shows. But so we looked at it, and I was like, you know, if we do 400 in table play, because the chips, win or lose, they took the chips from you. But if you won, you got your winnings in cash or in real money chips that you could cash in. They didn't want you to actually cash it. They just wanted you to keep gambling till it was all gone, obviously. But so if we did the 400 and then we took the 200 in choice in table play, that's 600. And I figured if we put 300 pass, 300 don't pass on the craps table, then we get $300 back, and it's 96 bucks for the weekend. And then we still have this $400 in slot play. And I said, even if those machines only pay out like 50%, that's a couple hundred more dollars.
We could break. Your first plan was to use it on a roulette. That was before you realized that craps was a better payout. You do half of it on black, half on red. So again,
but then we risked zero. The zeros.
Well, your idea was to put 10 bucks on the zeros.
Yeah.
So you would get, yeah.
But we could counterbalance it with a hard 12 at craps, and we should get it at some other time. But anyway, we could get more of our money back by doing it at the craps table.
I guess rather than go into the details of this for non-gamblers, we'll just say basically the way it was set up, yeah, is you could take this phony play and get, you're getting about $300 to $350 out of it.
And if you had one person betting one side of a bet and one person betting the other side of a bet, and then you could guarantee your return.
Yeah. So, and we were so nervous that they wouldn't let us do that. So we had like one of us do it at one end of the table and the other one do it at the other end of the table. I'm sure they knew what we were doing, but you know, we were like, can we really get away with this?
They didn't care.
And we also got like a free watch, which the four of us, I bought it off the other three guys for $2 each. So I got a watch for $6. We got free drink cards. It came with two free drink cards that you could use at any bar in the casino, which I think there were two. One, the diarrhea bar, because that's what it smelled like. And then the other bar, I don't even remember. I don't think we spent much time in it. We spent most of our time at the diarrhea bar because they had a live band. They had this like shelf with like a 6-foot. The ceiling was like 6 feet above that shelf, and the band would play on that tiny little thing, so their heads were pressed up against the ceiling.
Yeah, they only got really short bands, basically.
Wait, just to clarify, they had a bar. It smelled like diarrhea, and that's where you spent most of your time.
Well, it was nicer than the rest of the place.
Kinda.
And they had like slot machines that had your state or your zodiac sign on them to try to lure you into playing that particular one. So the plan went off without a hitch. We actually converted our 600 in table play to 300 in cash. And the $200 that I thought, or the $400 in slot play that I thought, well, you know, worst case scenario, we'll get a couple hundred bucks out of that. We actually got $52. So those machines were so rigged. They were just, and they were terrible.
But this is good to point out the cheapo moment here. Like, if we were spending $50 a weekend anyway, I mean, this is.
So with the $396 that you paid, you were kind of at this point, you were getting back everything but $50 or so plus
$44.
Okay.
And then getting all you can drink in the bar for two people, the room for two nights.
It was actually nicer than the motels we were used to staying.
That's kind
of
true.
It was like the first time I think we ever stayed in a casino hotel. But the wallpaper was silver. It was weird. The room was weird too.
Well, it was space age.
Yeah.
Which was nice.
Sort of.
Yeah.
Was there anything about the place that was actually fun in a non-ironic way? Did you ever actually enjoy yourself or anything that they provided there in a non-ironic way?
I don't think so either.
Like,
I don't think there's a single thing we
We would just cash and get out of there. We're like,
yeah.
I mean, it was interesting to see the weird games, but we never played them. Crapless craps and double exposure blackjack. We never played them because the odds were so bad.
I did. I played the double exposure blackjack once for like three hands and got out of there. Because the odds were just horrible. So double exposure meant you got to see both of the dealer's cards. And so you just hit until you beat the dealer, or you stood if you saw the dealer had a worse hand and wasn't going to improve. But the odds were just so bad. Like a blackjack paid even money. And if you tied, the dealer won. And it, but, you know, it was just a gimmick game. But so was Crapless Craps. Everything was a gimmick.
It was not fun, though. I mean, there were corners that we never really even explored, like going back to the corner, the back corners. There was no reason to stay there.
We never ate at the coffee shop, and we never ate at the steakhouse, obviously.
But we did eat at the buffet. Maybe that's a story for another time.
We ate at the buffet, but again, that was just for ironic purposes.
It's a bit of a tangent, but could we talk about the moon rock buffet?
Please, please.
It was basically like two, maybe three steam trays, each with a couple of different dishes. The steam long evaporated. So like it was like room temperature chow mein and it was basically the decor. It was like a multi-purpose room. So it was just no decor, except hanging above the whole thing was a giant space shuttle.
That was it. That's exactly it. It was just a multi-purpose room with a bunch of like pretty much just like temporary tables and conference
and stackable chairs.
And then the space shuttle overhead.
The quality of the food was, I don't think we've ever had worse, actually, in Vegas.
It was
the worst. That's saying a lot.
We've had some really bad buffets. And that one we actually paid for. They didn't include that in your room.
We need to include the photo of the three of us, you, me, and Phil, afterwards. We're standing in the parking structure holding our stomachs.
We regret it.
Like we're about to pay out, as we say.
So how did you feel about yourselves at this point? You figured out a place where you can get a room for very cheap and some free drinks and some laughs at the expense of this crazy place. How did you feel? Did you feel like you were really kind of getting it over on Las Vegas? Because most people never do. Or did you just feel like...
I don't know that we felt like it was something we'd do again. It was like, okay, we did that. You know, we paid $44, but... I don't know that we were like, yeah, we got to go back to Vegas World. This is going to be our home. I mean, Stupak enticed us to come back. I mean, did you feel like, Dan, did you feel like it was home or anything at that point? It was just like...
Honestly, I was a little too cheap to even do that deal. It was you and Raw and Stack who were doing it mostly. And I was just along for the ride because, you know, you had two beds. And so I was like, oh, free room for me. So,
well, the first one was Mike, Phil, you, and me. So it was $11 a person by the time we got done, you know. Right. And that was still like, it's okay.
But it was still right on the borderline of what we thought the value was, right?
Yeah. And so while we were there, you know, we were curious and we were using our free drink cards and asked the bartender, how many people are here on this deal? And he said, like, at least 75% of the people are here on the deal. And it's because you wouldn't go to Vegas World for any other reason. It's not like a place anyone would think of staying in Vegas unless they were enticed. And so I don't think we had any intention of ever going back, you know, even like if it was $11 a piece for the four of us, the first time was our net cost. And it was still kind of like, I don't know if that's a good deal. That's the kind of place it was. And so I don't think we had any intention of going back there. It was not going to be our home. It wasn't going to be a place we returned to most likely.
But the fact of the matter is you guys did go back. You went back quite often. So we're going to take a quick break, but when we return, we're going to hear how you guys figured out how to not just get the crappy free room from Vegas World, but how you managed to turn it into an enterprise, generating hundreds and sometimes even thousands of dollars for every trip to Vegas, all the while pulling pranks on the owner of the casino who made it possible for you. So we'll be right back right after this message.
Now, new for 1989 at the Riviera, Jeff Kutash's Splash. Even bigger, even better, and featuring world-famous Japanese illusionist Shimada. Don't miss the sensational new Splash, now at the Riviera. Feel the magic come alive. This time, it's a tidal wave.
Welcome back to the Neon Gutter Podcast. We've been talking about how Matt, Dan, and the rest of their friends figured out a way to take advantage of Vegas World's unique promotions. But those promotions weren't bringing in enough revenue for the casino's owner at the time, Bob Stupak. So he started upping the ante and the stakes went higher. So Matt and Dan, what was going on in Vegas World at this point that required so much additional cash flow that that they were trying to aim for. And how was your experiences at Vegas World starting to get you noticed?
So Vegas World, Bob Stupak was a striver. So I don't think he was ever satisfied that I own 1,000-room hotel. I have this massive empire that I've built myself. So he was planning on making it bigger, and he wanted to be bigger and better than everyone else. So he started scheming or dreaming of a stratosphere tower, the tallest tower in the world. That was his plan. He wanted to build a huge 1,000-plus-foot tower, but on his budget. So he needed more revenue. That's where, you know, and also people that did the deal in Parade Magazine, you know, they were like us, they weren't coming back. But he had a mailing list now. So, and he had a mailing list of people who were dumb enough to stay in Vegas World. And so he would send you emails with even sweeter offers than what was offered in Parade. So first he offered a deal where you essentially got enough table chips to pay for your entire trip if you just split them the way we did. Most people that went in just gambled them away. But, you know, if you just went in and split them, so we could do 400 on pass, 400 on don't pass, get our $400 back for the $396 that we paid to go in there. And then...
Man, don't rush over that. That's a significant piece. Like, getting 400 back for $400 you paid, you know? I mean, it's basically a free stay in Vegas, plus the free drinks and the LCD watch. And then the 20
steak
bucks
knives.
You get out of... Right?
Ooh. The alarm clock radio. Yeah, there's some great gifts. You know, it's one of those things. It was like a timeshare where they said you could get one of these four items. You know, a penthouse suite in New York, a set of steak knives. You know, you're like, oh, I wonder which one I'll get.
You guys still own any of that stuff that you collected? Oh, yeah. Those watches and you do.
I don't have watch.
I'm not
still
a hoarder, so no, not for me.
I still have a few Akira steak knives. I know that Phil still has like this hard plastic vibrating massager they gave him one time. Wow. And then there was the alarm clock radio. You know, this was all, if there's a company that makes cheaper stuff than China, that's where these things were made.
Do you use the steak knives?
Occasionally. We have some
really?
Better steak knives. Yeah.
Well,
they're
right.
Not terrible. The wooden handle tends to disintegrate, but you know the blade is.
Well, it's
metal.
Been 40 years.
Yeah,
it's metal. Yeah. That's a nice.
I don't have the watch anymore. It stopped working shortly after we left Las Vegas.
Yeah,
first trip. But so that was a great deal. You get to go for free. But then he started sending these $1,000 offers. So $1,000 in table play, you send him $400 and then he'll give you $1,000 in table play. If you gamble it away, he keeps $400 and enough people must have done it. We just went in and split it at the craps table. And so he was giving us $100 to screw around for a weekend. So this is kind of where we started writing a bunch of stuff because we were in Vegas with nothing to do and we were going and making money. It's like, you know, we got a ton of time on our hands. So that's when we started writing about Vegas and like people actually noticed us. And I think for the first time ever, we were doing something nobody else was doing. And we had this different perspective on Vegas that people hadn't thought about. And that's where we got kind of noticed. And like for you, Bert, the first place we introduced you to Vegas World through the internet, the very nascent internet.
For sure. You guys were writing these trip reports that were hilarious and bizarre. And, you know, at that time I was, you know, interested in Vegas and its history and what was going on currently. And your stuff just popped off the screen in terms of this unique perspective on somewhere and someplace and a perspective that nobody else had on these crazy places in Las Vegas. And
I love
for someone that had been to Vegas a couple times in the early to mid 90s, I don't think I'd ever even passed by or noticed Vegas World at all.
Right.
And so by the time the mid 90s came, it was doing the transition to the stratosphere. And so Vegas World was kind of gone and put in the etches of time, Vegas history. And you guys were really the best historians of that moment and that place.
And that's true. That is like a forgotten, you know, Vegas was long in the tooth. It wasn't a cool place anymore. And Vegas was a sad place at that point. If you just went to be entertained by Vegas, And so I think it isn't very well documented, this time before the transition to Excalibur and Mirage and Luxor and everything that came after that, which is, you know, we were lucky we fell in at that point. But, you know, so we were making $100 just to go to Vegas, but that wasn't good enough for us. So I realized I can book a room in my first name, but the system allowed me to book a second room in my middle name. So I could book two rooms and get two packages and make, you know, make $200 for a weekend. And then we realized, yeah, but you're leaving on Sunday and the system lets you do back-to-back rooms. So we could book more rooms for Sunday. And so Matthew would book a room for Friday. Richard would book a room for Friday. Then Matthew and Richard would book a room for Sunday. And Sunday we'd be leaving town, but we'd check into our new rooms, get our packages, cash them out, and hit the road back to school. So you're doing four packages, and you had to go to the craps table four times to do this.
And that's making you $100 each time for each package, correct?
Yeah, so $400
basically guaranteed. Basically guaranteed.
Guaranteed. $400 every weekend, which back in the 90s for college students was probably like half of my monthly income. And yep. That still wasn't enough. So we started, and I still have the flyers. We started making flyers that we hung up on campus saying, hey, you want a free trip to Vegas? We'll get you a room. We'll get you free drink cards. All you need to do is give us your name and we'll take the package portion of
it. I didn't know you were doing that.
Oh, yeah.
Did you get
we have flyers. Yeah.
You got takers?
Yeah, so Dan had moved on to graduate school at that point, so he wasn't as involved in this angle.
You missed out on all the big cash, Dan.
I missed out on all the big cash. I was getting my degree in poetry, so I was definitely...
Oh, well, you had the big cash ahead of you.
Exactly.
So the only thing you had to worry about was that the strangers that you were booking rooms for didn't trash the room and leave you with a huge bill. And I do remember one time a friend of ours had a room, and he was pretty athletic. He ran from the hallway, jumped from the hallway all the way onto the bed. Like, he was in the air for 10 feet and broke the bed frame.
Oh, my God.
And this was one of the extra rooms. He wasn't even going to sleep in that room. Oh, it's just one of the many extra rooms we had. And so we took the phone book in the room, because there were phone books back then, and propped the bed frame up with that phone book, and then gave that room to another guy who we didn't prop it up. We gave it to another guy. He propped it up with the phone book because he thought that he had broken the bed sometime during the weekend, and he didn't want to get in trouble for it. So he propped it up with the phone book. The other thing was, so Stupak was just like really aggressively
How many takers did you get for this deal? I didn't realize you were doing this on campus.
Yeah, I think the most was about 7.
Wow.
But there were about 4 of us all running 4 rooms each. You know?
Right.
So that's like...
Well, who was 16, it? You and Robert?
Robert, Brett, Mike.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then every now and then somebody else would try it. And we were bringing, you know, we were, 21, 22 at this point. And so we were bringing other friends from college who were way under 21 and just said, don't worry about it. Nobody's going to hassle you. The only time one guy who looked super young and it was 18 got carded one time, and they kicked him out of the casino. And so he just waited a half hour and came back in. And the security guard that kicked him out nodded and smiled at him. That's the way Vegas was back then. But
do the math for us. So at one point you're putting up flyers and you've got other people maybe that you know or don't even know that well from your college campus going with you to Vegas. You're giving them a free room and you're taking the chips. How much are you making at the peak of all this?
I think the best trip I ever had was $1,100 profit for the weekend. That was a pretty sweaty weekend because I was at the craps table so much. They were really starting to, like, I'd go to the craps table and there'd be like 5 men in suits standing at the craps table. And it's like, okay, I got to mix this up. So I went over and did some like $25 on red, $25 on black till I ran out of chips. And then that same trip, one time I went to redeem a package for my Dad, which was actually my middle name. And she says, well, you already picked up a package, because she looked at my license. You already picked up a package. So, no, this one's for my dad. She says, well, you can't pick up your dad's package. And I said, well, he went to Laughlin for the, or he went to Grand Canyon for the day. He's not going to be back. He asked me to pick it up because he's going to be back late. And you got the, you know, the booth's not going to be open then. And he wanted his chips. And she's like, I don't know. You know, this doesn't seem right. And I'm like, well, you know, just give me the chips and you can talk to him later. And finally, her compromise with me was, okay, I'll give you the $1,000 in chips, but you're not getting the drink cards. And I was like, okay, that sounds fair, considering I had like 30 drink cards in my pocket already. So that seemed fair.
It was
pretty sweaty toward the end. And they used to, like, by the end, the internet was starting to become a thing and we were starting to write about it. So I think more people were aware of what you could do. More people were taking advantage of it. And so,
well, yeah,
you'd win your chips at the craps table and you'd go over to the cashier to cash them in, and the cashier's booth would call the craps table to verify and ask them, you know, what was going on or whatever, if you had black chips, which is weird, like, that they worry about these black chips in a casino that's, I don't know, 80,000 square foot casino with, you know, 40 blackjack tables or whatever.
But that's what we were saying too, like, after a certain point, I remember other people on the tables looking at us going,
What are you doing?
Why? Yeah. You're betting against yourself, like, or even not even saying anything, but watching, like,
yeah,
it's one big bet and then you leave. What's this about?
Also, that is how you would do it too. You would just put it all on pass and all on dope pass. So all at
exactly.
once.
And $5 to cover the 12 and that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I would say outside of the hustle at the craps table or the roulette wheel in a pinch, I would say, in total, I gambled less than $20 at Vegas World over all the time I was there.
That's probably
and I would estimate money. I probably made $5,000 off of Vegas World, plus the free rooms, plus the free drinks, plus the fabulous watches and steak knives.
And Marty and Rossi, Alan and Rossi shows. And,
Alan and Rossi.
So really, we slowed the tower down.
Yes. Yeah, so then things got, he just kept sending the offers. They weren't tracking. I don't think it was a time where they could track what people were doing. So they just kept sending us the offers. And then
they,
because the internet was
track,
a thing,
but they weren't.
If they didn't send us the offers, somebody else would have the code and share it through the very early days of the internet. And so you always had a code you could use.
I was going to say, you could see that the casino is just falling apart at a certain point. Well, like,
we have a story about that.
Tape. We do. But even so, yeah, things were being repaired with duct tape, out of order signs. Yeah.
Handwritten out of order signs.
And that's because Stupak is keeping as much cash as possible to try and build this tower vision
right.
that he has.
Right.
Is that right? Right. Okay. So the way you tell the story about how you're getting more heat and there's more pressure on you, but as you're making more money, it sounds like every crime film that I've ever seen just before the fall. So at some point this does end, because you're not going out there every weekend anymore, making $1,100. How did this hustle end for you guys?
It didn't end because we got too greedy.
Right.
I think there was more we could have done. It ended because we were too cheap to keep going, because Stupak was so focused on this tower that he created this new Stratosphere VIP club, and he was going to make these packages available to the VIP members, and his lifetime VIP membership. I think you paid $2,500, and ultimately you got six of these trips, but you could only take one trip a year. And then you got a lifetime membership to the Diamond Club in this giant tower he was going to build that was going to have a lion sanctuary on the floor and swings on the roof. And it was, you know, it was total Stupak. It was nuts. But that meant we could only do the deal once a year. And we'd have to outlay $2,500 up front, which I was a college student. I guess I had $2,500 because Stupak gave it to me. I wasn't going to give it back to him and then try to get it back out of him over 6 years, because I didn't enjoy vacationing there. I just enjoyed getting quick cash. So that was the end for us, is that he was so focused on the tower and he was building that tower, and it, you know, ultimately didn't work out for him. I don't think enough people wanted to be a part of an exclusive club curated by Bob Stupak.
Was there ever an actual VIP club that existed? And did you ever get to peek in there?
There was, and I did get to speak in there toward the end when we were doing our last of our deals, and that was starting up. They had just kind of taken one of the storefronts in the little passageway where like the candy shop was and that kind of stuff, and turned into the VIP or Diamond Club or whatever they called it. And it looked stupak. It looked like, you know, they slapped some black paint on the walls and put up some plywood and maybe somebody cut with a jigsaw VIP and glued it on the wall. It looked as low rent as everything else in this world, but it was there. And I don't think I ever saw anyone in it.
Now, while you can't visit Vegas World anymore, you can visit the Stratosphere, and Bob did, or the company did eventually finish the tower, albeit with one crooked leg, because yep. Bob did not, it was the contractor, I believe, and did not quite get the dimensions right of the tower. So you can still visit it today, the Stratosphere. But how did Bob Stupak get eventually ousted out of his own resort?
He went public because he couldn't get the money to finish it. He had a budget, but his budget wasn't nearly enough for what it would actually cost to build a 1,000-foot tower. I think it was probably a fraction is what he thought it would cost. And he served as his own general contractor. So the project got delayed midway because one of the three legs that props up the tower was crooked. It wasn't like the other legs. And so they had to like put in
the plans for the tower on a cocktail napkin, and then it got wet.
It'll be great. Yeah. And so that crooked leg, I think, is hidden by the porte cochere or the entrance to the Stratosphere Tower now. So you can't see it because it's hidden inside of a building. But there, one of the legs is not like the others. And I think I have a photo of that when it was being built. So he fired himself as general contractor, and then I think he discovered how much it was really going to cost. And so he had to go public and issue an IPO to raise the money to build the tower. And once he did that, he lost control.
You talk about how the place was falling apart, although it seemed like it was perpetually kind of falling apart. Right. Was there ever a point where you realized this is the last time we're going to be in Vegas World before it becomes something else? Or did it just kind of fade away a little bit?
I kind of, now that you ask the question, I kind of remember, I don't remember which trip it was, but I remember we walked in there and just were just overwhelmed by how raggedy everything looked. You could kind of sense the energy. It felt like the Titanic sinking. Like there was this energy there, and just everything was in such shambles. I don't remember if we noted at the time. I kind of feel like we said, whoa, this is it. You know, because we've had that experience since then, like when Las Vegas Club closed down and there were just plywood sections. We're like, this is the end for this one. I think that's the first time we saw it in Vegas, like being inside going, whoa. It was basically like being a microbe in a corpse. Like you could see like this is rotten.
It's shutting down. Yeah, its organs are starting to fail. And we've closed a lot of casinos. We've seen a lot of our places go belly up. And there is a cadence to how they go belly up. Yeah. But yeah, that was the first time. I think my parents were on a road trip and they stopped in Vegas like in 95. And I went out and visited them, and I went by Vegas World. And it's the only time I ever saw Bob Stupak in person in the casino. Yeah. But I think that was when we realized this is the end. Because also, when Stupak was still in charge and the tower was still going up, there was a mysterious fire in the tower. And he had a mysterious fire in one of his previous enterprises. So the details are vague, and I'm not making any accusations. Just that a project wasn't going well, and then all of a sudden it was on fire. And they couldn't put out a fire at 800 feet of elevation. They didn't have the equipment for that in Vegas. And so I don't know how that ended up, but I saw Stupak in the casino, and the casino was really raggedy at that time. And that was it was pretty clear at that point that something had to give. Either it wasn't going to get built, or it wasn't going to get built by Stupak.
Do you remember what he said?
He said, yes, he did, because I was sitting there. I think I was playing poker because I was just discovering poker. And a woman came up to him to say how sad she felt about the fire and everything. And he was like picking his tooth with a tooth. And he goes, business is good. Business is good. Business is good. That's my one time I got to see Bob Stupak.
That's
although he did have his own channel on the in the on the TV in the rooms where you could watch him give you gambling advice, which was horrifically inaccurate. Well,
you could watch a younger version of him.
Yes. His motto was never gamble more than you can afford to win.
The perfect motto for Bob Supak.
He had a motorcycle accident right around then too, right before that. And, he also had tried to run for mayor and lost. So he definitely had his share of uphill struggles.
Yeah. He was self-made. He was a maverick. I mean, that's fair to say he was a maverick. Yeah. I don't know that I'd call myself the Polish maverick, you know, but like I wouldn't call myself the Finn maverick or the English maverick, but he was a maverick. That's fair to say.
Yeah.
He did things his own way. He expected people to love him for it. I'm not sure that they did.
But he definitely one of the most interesting casino owners that the town has ever seen. And that definitely. Town has seen a lot of very interesting yes. casino owners. Yeah. And I think he's at the top of the list for that, though. So we're going to take one more very short break. But when we come back, we'll have some final thoughts about Stupak and Vegas World and a sneak peek at some of the other outrageous stories and characters that will come later this season in the Neon Gutter. Be right back.
I love the good life, the excitement, and I love VIP treatment. So you come here, take a look. This Players Club card saves you big at some of the finest resorts in the world. Atlantic City, Las Vegas, Reno, Lake Tahoe, the Caribbean. And there are no strings attached. You can stay in one hotel, see a show in another, and dine in still another. Like here at Resorts International in Atlantic City. Players Club makes saving money easy.
I kept track and we saved over $200 this weekend.
As a member of the Players Club, you can kiss those long registration and show lines goodbye.
We got right in on the VIP line and saved $30 in tickets.
Players Club operators are waiting. Call right now and you'll get information about a special deal.
Two round-trip Super Saver airfares. Two complimentary room nights in Atlantic City or Las Vegas with a membership in Players Club.
You can't beat the deal, so call now.
Welcome back once more to the Neon Gutter. Now, we've talked a lot about how unique Vegas World was in its time, but does it have any legacy within the city of Vegas today? Vegas now is kind of known as almost a disposable town, and that places that were once legendary just get forgotten and evaporate. How do you feel like Vegas World, in its uniqueness, does it have a legacy within the history of Las Vegas today?
You know, I think that's a really good question. And I don't think it does. It does for us, but I don't think it does in the city. I think it's been forgotten in the corporatization of the whole city. And like Vegas World might have been the first victim because it was so unique. And what sits there now, the Stratosphere, is among the most bland and least interesting casinos in a city of increasingly uninteresting casinos. Casinos that aren't willing to take a risk or reflect any individual perspective or dream. So yeah, no, I think it's gone. I don't think people even think about Vegas World anymore. And that's pretty sad.
Yeah, there even was a statue of Bob Stupak at the entrance of Vegas World, and they took that out as well. You know, the person who had that vision. So it's sad that that's not there anymore. Now, really, the legacy of Vegas World lives in our hearts, because I think whenever we still go to Vegas, curmudgeonly old men that we are, like, we'll look at that tower and still think of Bob Stupak and the bent leg.
And the diarrhea bar.
And this is why we have to live forever.
Do I have to think about that? I really
I do.
Didn't I never wanted to, and now I feel like I have to think about that.
It's an unforgettable olfactory memory.
Mm-hmm. Well, while Vegas World and those crazy promotions and the diarrhea bar and everything else ended, it was really just a start for you guys. So coming up later this season, we've got many more great stories and episodes to share, from beef tongue pranks and shrimp cocktail eating contests to penny slot tournaments and film shoots with Motown legends, guys named Stinky and Shakes, a legend named Lucky Ned, and they all make appearances. But Perhaps the best story is how this group of college goof-offs who figured out how to travel to Las Vegas on $19 a day turned those experiences into a website that sold for hundreds of thousands of dollars. But that's all later on this season, and we'll see you later in the Neon Gutter.
The dice are cast, the cash won't last.
The Neon Gutter is a Big Empire production. Randy Shandis, executive producer. Our incredible theme music is courtesy of Rosin Coven. Do you have something to say? Call our voicemail line at 775-400-2941. And for more episodes, vintage photographs and video, contact info, and those amazing trip reports, visit us at neongutter.com.
Vegas Haiku number one. A smudged highball glass glints in the gutter. A Coke cup rolls in a breeze. The Neon Gutter.
What's that smell?